This is the Ed Milet Show.
Welcome back to Max Out, everybody. I'm Ed Milet. I'm fired up because I was at this guy's show last night. It was the best live concert I have ever been to. And you need to own that compliment.
Let me get the wallet out here. It was legit.
You got $11.
$11.
That wouldn't have worked anyway. Very rich, man. Evidently, these tours don't pay off. But all of you recognize this gentleman on my left. We were talking about the stats earlier. He called himself the Susan Lucci of the Grammy Awards. But 14 Grammy noms, like over 30 CMT, CMA nominations, like 8 wins, millions of albums, records sold.
A lot of nominations.
A lot of noms. A lot of wins, too.
That's some wins.
And my favorite artist and becoming my friend.
Thanks, this is
Dierks Bentley.
It's a pleasure to be on the show. I've seen the background. I've watched a lot of the podcasts and videocasts, so it's nice to be at your spot here. And I don't know if I can hold up to some of the previous interviews you've had, like Rob O'Neill. That one blew me away, but I'll do my best.
Oh, they're going to love you, brother. Because your story's so good. So
thanks, man.
What I want to do, probably everybody knows you, but I want to do a little bit of there's always like the before and after.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm researching you. And it's actually Frederick Dierks Bentley.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder if you went out as Fred Bentley, had everything turned out the same? Because you have the coolest name in the world, right?
Dierks Bentley. My name's so tough. There's so many marquees. My name still gets spelled wrong. Dierks Bentley or...
Really?
My friends,
I didn't even think it was a real name. Dierks Bentley, such a good name.
It could be a good...
But if you were Fred Bentley, do you think all of this would have happened as Fred Bentley?
I don't know. My mom... So all of us go by our middle name. So my brother, my sister, we've all... My mom used a family name for the first name, then our middle name is like the actual name we go with. But I've had people throughout my whole career be like, is Dierks a stage name?
Yeah.
Like, you think I would choose that as a stage name?
You don't think that's a cool name?
I don't know if it's cool or not, but it's hard.
Dierks Bentley just sounds studly to me.
Buck Bentley. That's a good country singer name, Buck Bentley.
Speaking of that, this is a weird place. We're going to go all over the place, but... Doug Douglasson. We're going to go all over the place in this interview, but he's got this like alter ego guy going right now.
I love Doug, yeah.
Where did he come from?
So, man, we...
This is Hot Country Nights, everybody. If you haven't seen this, you have to see this.
We've been doing this for a long time on the road. It's funny, you get on the road and everything's going great and you're having so much fun, but you always reminisce about the old days, right? You're like, man, how much fun was that? We used to play on Lower Broadway for tips and, you know, your car would get it towed and just all the craziness that used to happen in Nashville in the old days. And it's like, man, it'd be so fun to go back there and do it again. But you really think about it, it's like, the good old days are good because they're gone. They're fun to look back on, but were they really that much fun? Like lugging your PA system through Lower Broadway to play a gig? But we love country music. We love 90s country. I mean, I grew up listening to Alan Jackson, Clint Black, Garth Brooks, Dwight Yoakam, Marty Stewart, all that stuff. So in the 90s were just a really fun period in country music. The clothing, the hair, you know, it was just great. So we started playing these songs on our off days. We put together a little band to play around town a little bit, and we dressed in time. You know,
full mullet rolling.
The mullets, the high waisted jeans, the starched Wranglers, and then we took it on the road, man. We started just going out there, not telling the fans, and we just sneak on stage and play unannounced.
Okay.
And people are just going. The main thing for us is that the music has to be like perfect, right?
Yeah.
The music's great, you can get away with anything. So we really work hard to make sure. We probably rehearsed, like our ratio of rehearsing to actually gigs at that point was like, 100 to 1.
Is that right?
A lot of rehearsing. But we got dialed in and now it's like actually on the bill. So we're the openers for the openers for the opener for us. So we're the first of 4 bands going every night, 7 o'clock to 7:20. And Doug Douglasson is it's my alter ego.
Because all of you follow probably Dierks and know Dierks, but I don't know if you follow Hot Country Nights and Doug Douglasson, and you need to go
Hot Country Nights with a K. Nights with a K. It's a clever. See what I did there? Play on words.
It was clever, and it's hilarious because I was backstage last night, and all y'all came off the stage.
First time I really saw you.
I was like, there, and you're in full mullet mode, but the guys in the band were in full character. Like, look, no photos. There's just me back there.
They put
a little line around me so I couldn't get to them. It was so awesome.
Yeah, I think Rolling Stone was shooting some stuff there last night, and we were doing the same. Guys, please, like, no more paparazzi. We can't take it. But yeah, they're like a really, their whole thing is just kind of being like a sad, pathetic cover band that's trying to make it.
It was awesome, but the key thing, as you said, is the music's awesome too.
And so, thanks, man.
I want to talk a little bit about, so kind of go back to those times for you.
Yeah.
I think on my show, I try to take this mega achiever, a max out achiever like you, and have them see the real person.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like the real story. And the thing that I probably admire most about you is the kind of, I'm learning about you is the kind of husband and father you are. And just the way I've also just observed you treat people, it's your humility. Like you're genuinely one of the most humble, successful people in any field I've met. I admire that about
Thanks,
you.
Man.
And I think maybe part of that is kind of where you come from. So you tell me about your dad, Leon.
Yeah.
Your dad was older when he had you, number one,
was,
but I get
yeah.
the feeling he was a
I
pretty...
I got a brother that's 10 years younger than me. So my dad was 62 when my brother was born.
You're
so,
kidding me.
Yeah, my mom was keeping him young. Second marriages for both my folks.
Whoa.
My mom was in a pretty, very not very good marriage her first go around. My dad's first wife passed away of cancer. So they met at different times of their life. My dad was 50, my mom was 30. And I think, yeah, he was 51 or 52 when I was born. And yeah, he's just a great guy, man. Great sense of humor, big people person. You know, he just always talking to people, loved all that. You know, you always think your dad's one way, but I look back at my dad, like he loved watching, like, we only had three channels on the TV, we never had cable, but he, like any of those celebrity shows, like, you know, the, he was always watching that stuff. He liked
really?
That stuff. He liked the gossip stuff, but you wouldn't really know that
really?
About him. And I didn't know that about him until I started making it as a country singer. And He'd be up on all the latest stuff that's going on in Nashville
Come
and
on,
who's
really?
Coming around me. And I'm like, Dad, it's not a, it's my dream. Let me handle it. Just enjoy
really?
It. Just come to the show and have fun. Don't worry about it. But oh, my mom would tell me to stay up late at night worrying about what's going on in the business and stuff and the many nominations I didn't win.
Is that right?
No. But they loved it all. But he was just a great person, great guy. You know, he's one of those people I learned a lot through just because, not through words, but just through, you never wanted to disappoint him. He's a World War II veteran, grew up in a small town. You know, just one of the part of the great generation of people. And
that's
and
a remarkable.
Americans
your dad was a World War II vet.
Yeah,
I mean, I bet you that's something 80% of the people don't know about your dad.
Yeah,
but he was sort of a part of some kind of defining moments. I want you to picture little Dirks here, everybody, not this guy in front of you know millions of people, because it'll give you hope. Number one, if your life isn't where exactly you want it right now, like everything's not in order, and you're gonna see where he was to where he's gone, I think it's gonna blow your mind. I think it's literally gonna blow your mind. And then for some of you that have children that maybe aren't...
Do lives ever get in order? I mean, that'd be great.
That's a great question.
Has it ever worked out?
In small moments of order.
I think you're always fine-tuning, right? You never stop.
I do.
That's why I'm here. That's why I listen to you. That's why I'm here. I'm always trying to tweak it and get it a little more worked out.
So am I, by the way. I'm clearly a work in progress.
Yes.
Some of you might even have teenagers that are a little bit not on their A game. Your parents sent you to boarding school.
They did.
Did you need it?
I did.
What was going on? And what happened when you went there?
I mean, I threatened to run away. I had friends' parents that were going to let me stay at their place and not go. I mean, I had no desire to go to New Jersey. You know, eighth grade was a great year. I went to middle, I was in public school, in Ingleside Middle School, and it was just such a great year. It was like, you know, passing notes between every class with all the girls and the fights. There was always some fight after school every day, and just like all the different characters and types of people packed in this seventh and eighth grade. I met my wife there. I know you met your wife in in high school. Or,
we
so
did.
It's like junior high, and it was just, it was unbelievable. You know, it was just such an amazing time, but it was also a lot of partying. I mean, I think I partied more in eighth grade than I did,
you know,
the first few years of high school. Oh man, we were every day after school, there's something, you know, drinking, people smoking before people before class, and it was a lot of fun. And my sister had gone to Culver Military Academy for camp and ended up going there for high school, so I think it's where my mom got into this whole idea of like maybe sending us off to be fixed. And so she kind of said you're going to go away for high school. And
did it fix you or not?
Well, that's where I got out there. I was in New Jersey. I was the only kid from Arizona out there. Made some great friends. I'm like you in a way. I'm a chameleon. I make friends. I just can fit in kind of anywhere, I feel like. Yeah. I'm going to make friends no matter where I am. And I feel like my whole life I've been a little bit of I have a lot of friends, but I don't have necessarily like one super tight overall group. I just have a lot of great groups that I get to be part of. And some of those friends from that school still have those friends around. And that's really where I got into country music. So it was a great experience. I was out there kind of lonesome feeling, just being away from everybody. And I mean, as far as my dad goes, there is some sadness there because I was 14, you're kind of gone. You know, I'm from Arizona to New Jersey. And so from that point on, the time I only saw my parents or my dad before he passed away was through, you know, Christmas vacation or spring break. And I was pretty busy in the summers. But they, I mean, it was the nicest thing I think you could do for your kids is to give them wings and go find your own life. You
that's
know, go,
a, kind of significant move, though.
Big
right?
move, yeah.
So you...
It's not Merle Haggard in a, you know, growing up in a right. boxcar. It's a little different type of way of getting there. But it's the same idea of just, like, kind of being on your own and being totally rooted from, you know, pulled out from your roots and where you were from and kind of trying to figure out what this world is and what you're trying to do in it.
I wonder if it dawns on you... I don't think it does. Like, what's happened here? Because you're in the midst of doing it, right? I don't, you know, oftentimes, very rarely, whatever the good fortunes are that have come my way,
yeah,
I don't know that it dawns on me, you know, what the hell's going on?
I mean, I think that you and I are talking off camera about people who have influenced us, like Tony Robbins, obviously your show. I have a lot of friends out there that have been successful. My friend Blake McCoskey from Tom's Shoes, he's a guy that's always looking for ways to, you know, how to just get better at what we're doing. And I think when you do that, you spend a lot of time in the present. You don't spend a lot of time in the past. I rarely, unless like doing an interview like this is only the third podcast I've ever done.
Thank you for doing it.
Oh man, this is probably my last one. This is, I feel like you can't go out on top.
Thank you.
But it's like, how do you, you know, it's like, I don't spend much time reflecting on all that stuff. When you do, it's kind of scary, you know? It's like you get into something, I'm sure all your businesses, it's like, you look back on it now, it makes, there's a linear line, you can see how it all worked out, but when you're on the other perspective looking forward, I look back on that now and think, like, the kid that was playing those bars and doing all those gigs, I was always present in those times. It doesn't matter where I was, playing a casino gig at 2:00 in the afternoon, sun's beating down, I was having fun. I'm playing a gig, this is amazing. So I never really, but looking back on it now, it's like, gosh, I can't believe all that stuff actually worked out. What was I doing? Kid from Arizona.
Right.
Parents have no musical abilities.
Yeah.
I chose to be a country singer. I wound up in Nashville. It's all very, it's kind of scary to look back at. So I like being in the present moment and, focusing on
the future. You said it to me last night. I think it's like a running theme with you, is trying to be more present. I think it's one thing I want to do. I always kind of try to pull out little lessons. I think, I just gave a talk yesterday about this, just oddly that you're saying, and I was in Ohio. I don't even know where it came from because it wasn't in my notes. But I was talking about how most achievers that I know are present or actually maybe even looking a little bit forward.
Yeah.
And most people I know that are struggling in their life, if they were really being honest, are running an old story.
Totally. They're
looking
back.
They're running this old story. They continue to, their life becomes almost like a boring book of one long chapter because they're repeating either like a previous victory. I was a quarterback in high school.
Yeah.
Or I got my master's degree. Or it's something negative that happened, right? My parents sent me to boarding school. My dad was an alcoholic. If you're listening to this, this is a huge clue. Like if you got nothing out of today and you're going to get more, it's that, where's your frame of reference most of the time in your life? Is it past, present, or future? The happiest people are present.
Yeah.
And achievers struggle. Most achievers struggle with becoming present because they're looking forward all the time.
Yeah.
And most people that are in pain or are not achieving at their maximum potential are in a past frame of reference.
Totally.
So this is something that's really huge for most of it. It's why, actually, when I do the show, it's difficult for achievers to go, okay, I'll go back for you because you're asking me. I'll tell you my old story.
Right.
But it's kind of uncomfortable, awkward.
Yeah. I mean, it's relevant.
It's relevant to the listener, but not relevant to you. Well,
that's really, I mean, all these stuff I said there, the ones like, you know, I think about a friend of mine, Jesse Alexander, with the song The Climb for Miley Cyrus. Mm. And that song is all about enjoying the climb. It's not about the destination. It's about enjoying the climb. Right? So that's a big thing for overachievers.
Yes.
I just reread that book, The Four Agreements, and that talks a lot about being, you know.
Tom Brady recommended that to me.
Did he really?
That's his reference book.
That's his thing. It's about this big. It's got four things, right? Your words and be impeccable with your word. Don't take anything personally. Mm-hmm. Don't make assumptions, and always try to do better. Those are the four things.
Yes.
But in the early part of that book, it talks about being your story. Right. But I haven't been through nearly what so many of your listeners have been through. There's so many traumatic experiences, especially for a lot of women out there. I can't imagine what that's like.
Yes.
But I still would say it's your life. It's very short. You can, at some point, if you're going to have any happiness, you have to like just...
You got to move
forward. Yeah.
I didn't know we were going to go there, but like, you know, I have this thing that I talk about often where everything in your life happens for you and not to you if you believe that to be the case.
Mm.
So like my dad's drinking and my dad's my best friend. He's been sober a long time, but it actually happened for me.
I heard
me.
You talk about that.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I would literally not be doing this. I wouldn't have been pretty good at like evaluating. My dad would come home. I'd have to kind of distinguish. Is it sober dad or not sober dad? By the way, my dad's my best friend.
Right.
Literally.
Which is amazing. Yeah.
But it built these skills in me.
It made you.
That when I went to work at the group home, everyone here knows my story, but it happened for me. But if you're always replaying it.
For me.
Yeah, if it's always replaying it as just the negative, it's gonna be a self-fulfilling prophecy the rest of your life.
It's amazing how, and I feel like recently that is something I've been working on, but it just like when something happens where you're always like, oh, that's damn. Yeah. And it's like, whoa. And I'll tell my wife, who I'm like, this could be a good thing. You know, mm-hmm. So prime example, the other day I was fishing in Colorado at my festival. I didn't have a fishing license, right? So I was on a private farm fishing a creek. I wasn't even expecting to fish. It was just such a random thing. My buddy Luke Bryan had been there the day before. He caught a fish on there. And so I had to go out there and try to top him, of course, the next day. And I caught four. And I posted on Instagram. Really smart move, right? Yep. And I'm walking through town the next day, and I'm taking pictures of some local people, just kind of checking out how the festival was, having a good time. There's a wildlife guy there with his camera. Mm. And I'm like, he's like, do you want to do this here or somewhere else? And I was like, my ego, I'm like, he wants to take a picture with me, obviously. Mm. Yeah, we can do whatever you want, man. I'm cool. We can do it here. He goes, did you catch four rainbow yesterday? And I said, yeah. Mm-hmm. You have a license? I said, no. He goes, do you want to do this here or somewhere else? So I got in his car and he gave me a ticket.
I saw this.
And so I posted it on Instagram, but I immediately took it down because I don't want to mess with Luke. Is a huge hunter and a fisherman. So I don't want to mess with his whole situation.
Right.
He and I actually,
And now so, 10 million people heard it.
But I took it off Instagram, now they're.
I'm just kidding.
But, well, here's the thing. So he calls me, because I took it down off Instagram, but I forgot about it. It's still on Facebook and all that. Yeah. It's all linked. I'm not very good at all that stuff. And I was like, man, you know, this could end up being a good thing. Because we need to own up to it, you know. Mm-hmm. You need to, you know, call the folks at Colorado Wildlife. You might make some friends there. It might be, this is what you do. He is a hunter fisherman. That's what he does. This is gonna be. He's like, buddy. I talked to the folks over there, made some good friends.
Good.
There's a 10 out of 10 conversation. Mm. You know, they got it. I paid the bill. So I just feel like everything that happens to you for you could be something you turn before you, because you can kind of spin it all into being a positive thing.
The happiest people. If you look at any area
not
of your
positive,
life, eventually.
I know some people have been through horrific things, but you can turn it into being something that makes you who you are.
Okay.
The heartbreak you go through. That girl broke your heart, but it made you the person that you are.
I like to think that, I think you're right, I like to think that it should have at least taught you something.
Yes.
There's a lesson learned.
That's the only time you learn.
That's when you learn.
You only learn in the hard stuff.
And I'm a huge, huge believer in that. And I think the happiest people don't wait for hindsight for that. They discover that in the present moment. Like, one little random example is my dad's got cancer right now. And you'd think, my God, what the hell is good about your father suffering with cancer, right? But to be candid with you, I've looked at my own family as the time more precious now.
Yeah.
When the phone rings and it was my dad before, maybe every once in a while, I'd be like, I'll call him back. Now it's like, oh, it's dad. I get to talk to him again. It just made everything more precious. It's not that like this stuff's not cool, but like really, would I rather have a beach house or would I rather just be able to talk to my dad, right?
Totally.
So it's put things in perspective. So everybody listening to this, I just want you to understand something, because this is why I wanted Dirk to talk about, you know, some of his beginnings. Your mess does not disqualify you from being successful. Your current mess, the current thing that you're ashamed of or gives you anxiety or gave you pain, you have our permission to set that down, turn the page, and start to write a new chapter in your life. And that's why I want to talk about some of those other chapters too, by the way. So with you, you're going to say something.
Well, no, it's amazing. It's, you know, that's what I love about life, is that you can, you know, I think it was a little easier probably before social media, but you could just be. I like being the idea of being able to change whoever I want to be. I don't like being stuck in one type of like person or whoever my parents were or whoever. You know, I think one thing about growing up in Arizona, there's almost less roots to like a culture. Yeah. It's more just like, just be who, you know, I'm in the South now, and there's definitely a lot of like.
Sure, legacy thinking.
Legacy, and it's like, that's good for some folks, that's fine. But for me, I just like, man, who do you want to be today?
Yeah.
Just be whoever you want to be. It's fun, that's what kids do. I learned so much from my kids. By the way, the got to. I was riding my, to school with my daughter, and I was like, yeah, I gotta write songs today with these guys, and I was kind of saying it like that, and she goes, you got to? I was like,
hello.
I was like, yeah, I get to, you know, like you lose perspective, you get something, like a house or something, something that would have changed your whole life, your life would be perfect if you just own a house, right?
Yes.
And then 3 years later, you know, you own it for a while, and you kind of forget that you own a house.
You're right.
I'm a songwriter in Nashville, Tennessee. I get to write songs with amazing people. I actually wrote a song that day called I Don't Got To, I Get To.
And you did.
Based on what she'd said. But
how beautiful is that?
Yeah, but
I did this yesterday. It's so weird. After I spoke, I went to our team and I said, I have to go do this signing with the books and the pictures.
Right.
And I said, immediately, I went, let me correct that. I get to.
Totally.
It like changed the whole experience for me. Speaking of your children, Knox is a smart dude.
Yeah.
Because he understood how much bigger my arms were than yours last night.
He didn't matter how much I tried.
I
was giving
him
a wedgie. I was like, the knuckle of justice was coming in there. His arms were bigger.
He's your identical twin, by the way.
Yeah, he's a little mini-me.
That was so cool. So I want to talk about defining moment a little bit. I get the feeling, because your dad was involved a little bit. Didn't you drive, wasn't there kind of a significant decision you made to just head to Tennessee?
I did.
What is that? What happened there?
I just knew after high school, I went to Vermont, University of Vermont for a year, and great place. I don't know what the hell I was doing. It's kind of drifting a little bit. I got in, so I went. I wanted to go to Boulder, where my wife went, but I did not get in there. I've never been a very good student. But I got there, and I just realized I just wanted to be, I was obsessed with country music. I don't know why. I mean, there's been a couple defining moments in my life. One was I was 17 years old. My friend Jack Brown lives in Chicago. He sat me down. I was playing I'd been into country music with my dad. He liked country music, so I listened to it because of him. 13 to 17, I was into anything that had power chords. Van Halen, Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne, Pearl Jam, you know. I was just listening to anything. But hadn't really found a musical home, but my buddy sat me down and he played me one song by Hank Jr., Hank Williams Jr., but let's see if it's a song called Man to Man, and it is, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like a coin going down a slot machine and hitting all the right levers of your being. It's just like, really? I knew exactly what I wanted to do from that one moment. And he played me a Marty Stewart song, and he played me an Alan Jackson song. I can tell you the three songs. And I was like, yeah. And I put the electric guitar down, get the acoustic guitar out. Like, it was like I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and I moved to Nashville 2 years later. He actually went to school down at Vanderbilt where I was. And
did you know when you moved there? Like, was there something for you to go to when you got
no,
there?
No, I had no family there. I had no one though.
You
no
just
one
chased
there.
The dream.
I went there, and that this time around when I applied at school, I went to talk to the admissions director. I mean, she could see the passion in my. Mm. I was like, I have to be in Nashville. I have to be the school, and just, you know, it's amazing what you can accomplish when you're really, people can see that's authentic.
Yeah.
You coming through. And I got into school there. And the first day I got to Nashville, I got a job as an intern at the Country Music Association. And I mean,
how weird is that?
Yeah.
You were an intern for CMA.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
Then you went
Oh yeah. I used to walk on the walkie talkie on and you know, escorting Shania Twain back to her bus. And
that's so
amazing.
Oh,
I did all that
to me.
Stuff behind the scenes back there. Yeah.
Are you all hearing this? Like, I don't know if everybody gets this. This dude was an intern at CMA. Like, how'd you get that job, by the way?
Just got it. I wanted it. Mm. You know, there's the one quote that I carried around my whole, like, I had this binder that had like my songs in there, but also had all my songwriting appointments, and it just kept with me. And there's a guy named Harold Bradley who was a big figure in Nashville, and on his tombstone he had this quote. I thought it was his. It turns out I think it's from Calvin Coolidge, but it's about how nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Mm. And nothing in the world can take. Talent will not. Nothing's more common than unrewarded talent. Mm. Genius will not. Mm. Unrecognized genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world's full of educated derelicts.
Listen to you.
Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. And persistence has just always been like my thing, I think. I'm not the best singer by any means. I'm like really not that great of a singer, honestly. I'm like,
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I can find a note and put a lot of air behind it, and I have some gravel to my voice, and I'm like, I'm a good bar singer, you know. There's some unbelievable singers out there, and they're on TV, they're all over the country. I mean, it's kind of like the lottery. You have to be present to win. You have to be in Nashville to do this, right? So that's just step one. And then you just got to be persistent. But it's easy to be persistent when you are afflicted with a love of something, right? And I just loved country music. And my buddy, yeah, it was more than a desire. It's like, it's an affliction. Like, I can't help but, like, listen to this music. I love this music. I have to get to Nashville. I don't have any friends there. I have any family there. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I've just got to be there. And I don't know how this is even going to work out, but I just love this music so much, and I'm such a fan of it, still am. And
I've done a lot of shows. No one's ever said that. Afflicted with the love of something.
Oh,
that's
man.
Good.
Trademark that. We'll write that.
That was good. No, I think sometimes also people that are successful take for granted things they're good at. Like, one line, I don't care if it's like a football player, a businesswoman I've had on the show or whatever, and you did it. Like, they're very comfortable stepping into spaces, buildings, environments that they're ill-prepared for. Like, they have a threshold where they're like, I'm just going to get in there and then I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what you did. You got in the car, you went to Nashville, you just like, you Vanderbilt, you just like stepped in there, you'd figure it out.
Yeah.
Whereas most people go, I have to be completely prepared. I have to know everything. I have to have everything lined up. Then I'll take a step.
That's amazing. You know Sadhguru, you ever, Sadhguru, he talks about that. He was getting ready to speak somewhere. I go, are you going to prepare for it? He goes, no, I just show up. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. I mean, your whole life's preparation, right? Just show, just be there.
Yeah.
Be present in that moment, be authentic. Mm. You know, that's, I think, some of my best shows are the ones where I just walk on stage with that get-to attitude, mm-hmm. that sense of joy and wonder. You know, how would Knox walk on stage? Whoa, look at these light bulbs. Yeah. This is amazing. We have a video screen. You know, how would a kid walk on stage? And then just be present and be and I don't know what the hell we're talking about now. But
I love what you're doing. You're turning into a little bit of a Yoda, which I like. I watched this last night with you. Like, it's just two dudes. The irony is we're talking about these really deep things and you and I are just sort of dudes, right?
Yeah,
But I love this
because... Well, I love that I can talk to you about this stuff because I'm not going to talk to this about...
Right.
You know, the band guys talk and I talk about this stuff. I probably won't talk about this on stage tonight in San Francisco.
I'm so thrilled we get to do it. And I watched you last night and there... Because you said that to me backstage about, you know, Knox and everything special and wow and the lights and... That in life, in business, in anything,
joy and wonder, yeah.
You can't transfer something to somebody that you're not really experiencing.
Yeah.
So like, I watch you, and I'm like, he's really experiencing this joy and bliss and wonderment up there last night, and gratitude.
Yes.
And and you feel it because you're really experiencing it. Those of you that want to have an effect on people, it has to be authentic, right? You
have to be experiencing. Yeah. One of my first lessons I got in singing was. I never had like a real lesson. I went to the bar, paid my $5 cover charge, and watched this band play every Tuesday night. But the lead singer, a guy named Terry Elders, he's like, you want to sing country music, you have to hear the words in your head, and then they have to filter through your a broken heart of some sort, and then come out. It just can't go straight from here to here. And that probably works in any business where it has to go through like some experience, some like traumatic experience you've had.
Yes.
It helps when you, especially in country music, someone like George Jones or Merle Haggard, and they're singing. There's so many great technical singers out there. Mm-hmm. They can do all this stuff. But I don't personally, it doesn't like hit me.
Yes.
Like someone like George Jones, who maybe wasn't always perfectly in tune and in key.
Yep, right.
But when he sings, you feel it, right? It's not a hearing, you feel him singing it. So my buddy Terry said it to me at the time. I was like 19. I was like, damn, I haven't, like, you know, my parents are still living and I haven't had any girls. I've really broken my heart yet. Like, am I ever going to be able to sing this music? And then I had some experiences that helped me, that did break my heart and helped me understand what he's talking about, the difference between like listening to something and actually feeling and hearing it. And
Can you tell us what one of those experiences were?
I mean, there's certainly some relationships where, you know, I think I'm a romantic type, even though I don't wish I wasn't at times. But I really believe in the whole, I think my parents, you know, married for 30 some odd years, I believe in that, I want that. And so in some situations where, one in particular where, my hair was falling out. My mom sent me these huge, like, horse pills to try to keep my hair. I mean, it was just coming out in clumps in the shower.
You're that stressed.
Lost all this weight. I mean, it was so skinny. A buddy of mine who's at the show last night, Vaughn, you might have seen him. He took me to the YMCA, tried to get me back in shape. Well, I got a hernia because I was like, you know, just like, she's working out too hard. It was bad times. And I really, I was just going down this really dark, unnecessary, like, path. I mean, it's just so unnecessary. I remember my dad being like, Dirks, your mom's one of, like, 1,000 women I could have married. There's no one person for any of us. I was like, Dad, of course there is. What are you talking about? There's the one. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine, it kind of like someone listening to you, just, like, snapped me out of it. He's like, dude, stop. Like, what are you doing? Stop. And then he kind of pushed me up against the wall. He was kind of threatening to kick my ass.
And
something just snapped like that. I was like, you're right. What am I doing? This is ridiculous. I still remember the date.
And
that happened and where it was. And that and just certainly my dad passing away had a big impact on me too. Really, kids, gosh. I think I get to be a better singer and better performer just with each kid that comes along.
I've read this quote of yours about writing that fits this. And you said, you can't write about stuff you don't know. You have to live it. You have to roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty. Live life. You have to live life to be a great communicator, basically. You said that. And so,
one thing that's great about country music, there's always going to be the 17-year-old kids like me that, you know, driving a pickup truck that, you know, get to go see Garth Brooks the first time. You love those party songs. Ain't Going Down Till the Sun Comes Up. I mean, those are the songs that get you into country music. But what country music is really geared towards, I think, is for life experiences. And that's why it's got this beautiful, beautiful fan base of people that love the sad songs, man.
Yeah.
You don't get that in other genres of music. There's a whole, we love, sad songs don't make you sad. Sad songs make you feel like a friend. And, you know, a lot of kids, when I was 17, or when I was 13 to 17, the country music really didn't speak to me because I hadn't had those life experiences.
Whoa.
But I feel like for me now, I mean, your dad passes away, a son's born, the circle of life stuff, you look back, you've been married for 10 years, you know, just you've hit the top of one mountain, but you know, there's David Brooks has a book out there called Second Mountain.
You read a lot, don't you?
My wife kind of got me into reading. Mm. Country, we do read country singers occasionally. I do. I try to read more, but it's like you've reached the top one mountain, you know, career and family. Mm. What's the second mountain going to be? Mm. You know, and so like these ideas, I think what makes country music great, the older you get, the more wisdom you get, just makes you a better songwriter, makes you a better singer, makes you a better communicator to your audience out there.
You wrote I Hold On about your dad, right?
I did. He passed away, and that day that he passed away, I was actually holding his hand as he passed away, it was not overly important for me to be there, because I know it's such a chancy thing to be there when that actually happens, but I've been thinking about holding his hand, and wow. How much I looked at my dad's hands in general. He always had a Timex Iron Man watch, and his hands could do anything, right? My dad's like the generation that could fix anything and do anything with his hands. And I was just thinking about, I was driving around Phoenix thinking about him, and drove to this church we used to go to, and I still have the same truck that he and I drove to Nashville, and we drove out in a 1994 Chevy truck, which finally just put a new stereo in after it's running great. And I was like, why do I hold on to that truck? Why do I have his watch? Why do I hold on to these things? And I wasn't trying to write a song. I was just trying to answer some of those big questions that come when your dad passes away. And I ended up writing a love song that only would work in country music.
Yeah.
Because it's a love song about how you hold on. Why do I hold on to this old beat up truck? Why do I keep this old beat up guitar? And use those two analogies to explain to your wife why you'll never leave her. It's like, that would never work in like any other genre of music. It's like, what do you mean? You're comparing me to an old beat up truck.
Truck, right.
But country fans get it. But yeah, it was actually my biggest song. And honestly, in a weird way, whatever you believe in, when my dad passed away, like my career took a whole nother, like it actually began to really work. So
unbelievable.
He's up there. Pulling some strings for me, I feel like.
That's beautiful, bro. Very few songs, I don't know, affect me lyrically.
Yeah.
I love Riser. I think it's one of them. All of you, even if you're not a country music fan, like, if you go read some of the lyrics this man's written, like, they make a difference. It's actually, and I know you're going to slough it off as, you know, you'll be humble about it.
I'm not going to be humble about this one, because this is one of the songs I didn't write.
Okay, you
so
didn't like that.
So I can brag
on
this one. I love this song.
It's like, some of it's like poetry, right?
Yeah.
But like, that song gives me, I'm serious. I play that song literally when I'm going through difficult things. It's a trigger song for me. Music can be a trigger, by the way, to change your state. We all know that.
Yeah.
You hear a song from your childhood, it takes you back to that moment instantly. Music can do that to you. This song, Riser, for me, man, it's like I just step into...
Music's so powerful. There's a lot of times I get in a car, if I'm going from the airport to something, I'm like, don't play any music. Mm. Or if I'm going to work out first thing in the morning, when I'm really on my game at home, I do like a 5 a.m. workout.
Okay.
And I don't listen to music on the way to work out because I'm like... I just want to be present in this moment because music is going to take me.
The
second I hear a song, I'm going somewhere.
Yeah.
We're going back in the past, or I'm getting pumped up. Maybe I don't want to keep my energy low.
Mm-hmm.
Music's so powerful. It's crazy. It does. It can transform your life. That song, Travis Meadows, Steve Moakley wrote that song. It got sent to me. I was like, whoa, this is like who I want to be. Actually, I still have some of the ink on my hand last night from the guy I dedicated that song to. His wife had passed away. And I dedicated that song to him because that was their song. I always meet people backstage that inspire me before I walk on stage. Those meet and greets are so important for giving me the fuel to walk out there and give the show context. But, oh man, what a great song. It became the corners. I named the album after. The album was called The Riser Album. And there's some people in Nashville, you know, that they write songs every day. And I go and try to hang in there with them when it's time to make albums, but I'm always just...
What percentage do you write versus songs that someone else?
Some albums I've written the whole album.
Okay.
A lot of it, maybe too many albums. I've written too many of my own songs. It's hard to tour and also be a great songwriter. And there's some times I feel like I've written too many songs. It's probably 70-30 I write.
You write.
Yeah, but
Burning Man you did not write.
Burning Man I did not write.
Unbelievable lyrics too, right? You agree with me on that?
This song's unbelievable. I had that song for Luke Dick. Luke Dick is one of the songwriters in that song. And just unbelievable.
They told
Bobby Pinson. And it had it for 2 years. I cut it 3 different times trying to get it right, but it's such a powerful song. It's so personal to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about country music and songs, that the more personal they are to you, the more you write. Look at Taylor Swift. She writes songs with a guy's name in them, you know?
Yeah.
I know my publishers have told her, like, hey, don't put Ned's name in there.
Right.
Nobody knows Ned. She's like, well, that's who broke my heart, so that's what I'm going to write about. The more personal you make it, it's... amazing the more universal it becomes. So like songs like Rise or Burning Man, they're so personal to me. You then release them out to the wild, and people make that, that becomes woven into the thread of their lives.
But I read when they wrote that song, they wanted it for you.
I think
they,
so. I've been writing with those guys. I wrote with Luke Dick a lot for my record, and my thing is like, listen, if we can write songs together, great. If you write something of me and mine, please send it to me. I don't care where it comes from. I'm trying to make, just like, if you could, writing a book, if you could, you know, have people write certain chapters, I want to make a great album.
Yes.
I'm not so necessarily like, I don't want credit for each song. It's not about that. It's about making a great body of work. And if I could borrow some songs from people to help say what I'm trying to say, instead of just trying to draw from the 70 songs, all right, if I can draw from 3,000-4,000 songs, I'm going to make a much better album.
Yeah, and you own them to half your life you struggle, half your life you fly, half your life you're making trouble, half your life you're making it right. One day I'm the exception. Most days I'm just like most. Some days I'm headed in the right direction, and some days I ain't even close. Like this stuff.
I mean, it's so good, right?
It's so true.
It relates to everybody, yeah, all of us, man.
Dude, it's so good.
It's such a great song.
I love your music.
Thank you, man.
And I'm not, everyone knows me pretty well. Like, I love songs that make me feel something, and your songs make an impact on me. That's why I told you last night was the best live show I've ever been to before.
A
couple quick things. I just wrote some questions I wanted to ask you myself.
Yeah.
So, not like stream of consciousness. Yeah. Are you gifted or are you skilled? Meaning, were you born with a gift for this, or do you think you've developed a skill?
Oh, definitely all skills. It's like, even when I play like a guitar, I mean, it's all muscle memory. I wish I could tell you about, I actually took a theory class and had a dropout. I don't understand how it works. I don't know. And I'm not giving up on it. I'm still a student. I play mandolin. I love playing a mandolin. It's like my kind of go-to like instrument I'm trying to learn how to get better at, but it's all, I've had to just like take a round peg and hammer it into a square hole and just like, you know, it's all through like just sweat and physical, you know, sweat equity is the whole way I've gotten here.
I want everyone to hear that. You're talking about one of the most successful men in the history of country music when you add up albums sold and et cetera, et cetera. One of the most relevant people in the music industry today. And he's telling you he didn't have a natural born talent for what he does. And there's all of you out there, you know, that want to make some big dream come true. There's something you want to pursue, and you're thinking, I don't have an incredible gift. Actually, by the way, you could have a gift. Part of that gift could be your ability to just be available. I just did a video on this. But one of the best abilities is availability. Just
wow.
You're a grinder.
Love that.
Like, this dude grinds. Like, he works his ass off, has worked his ass off. Picture this, at his level, he performs 3 times a night at his shows right now on this Burning Man tour.
Yeah.
He plays the first one, like that acoustic set, right? You play that
30-minute acoustic set and the... play mandolin, which is great. I do it the Hot Country Nights at 7, and then my main show at 9:30. But
come on,
you know what I do, and this might be interesting for your listeners. Yeah. But the worst part of your day, or the worst part of your set list, or whatever it is, I always try to take that worst part and make it my favorite part. So that acoustic show I do at 6:15, it used to be me alone with a guitar. I'm a band guy. I like playing music. Me, music is like people playing music together.
Okay.
Alone on the guitar, I can do it, but it's just not really fun for me. I'm not that great of a guitar player. It's like. So I used to do it alone, 6:15. If anyone wants to come out, some extra money, you get food, drinks, and you get an acoustic performance, right? I do that every night. And it's like, it just wasn't the most fun. I got to leave the guys behind. We're in the dressing room jackassing around. I'm like, I got to go do this. I got to go do this thing. And then, you know, one of the guys started joining me, and then two guys joined me just out of the love of doing it, you know. And then they all joined me. And it was like, you know, let's take this thing, and let's make this the highlight of our whole day. And like, I'm trying to get better at the mandolin. How about I get paid to do mandolin practice every night. So I put the guitar down, I got my mandolin out, scared to death, plugged it in. They all sound so terrible when you plug them in. And instead of just singing acoustically, now I have my ears in, an awesome microphone, great speakers. We're up there and I'm getting a chance to practice bluegrass music for a half an hour every night. And then I can take all that money and split it 6 ways. So the guys are making a bunch of money too now, you know. Everyone's making, it's like become a really fun, took something that was just like, so aim the set list, the part of the show that he's like, this is not the best. How do we make that like my favorite part of the whole show?
What a great lesson.
You just keep like upping that. So
what a great lesson. In your day and everyone's day, they typically avoid the thing they fear the most or the thing that's the most uncomfortable for them to do. And it's the very thing that if you did it would be your gateway to the next level.
Right.
That's so cool
that
you said that.
Yeah, taking that.
So you're not naturally talented, he's telling you, everybody, that he's developed this skill. I got a question for you. I've asked a few guys at your level when they're, are you afraid you're going to lose all this?
Do you think about it? I think I'm at a point where I just like to go on my own terms, but I think when it's over, We were talking about this off camera. I'm playing golf with Jack Nicklaus on Friday, Saturday, which is ridiculous. I'm not that very good of a golfer, but I'm a big fan of his because I read a book on him, and he talks about how golf is just an extension of his competitive spirit, which is crazy. You think of Jack, you think of golf. You think this guy loves golf. You think he's like, it's like, he's like, really, it's just like the way I get the competitiveness. That's where I compete.
Yep.
And he's like, so when I stopped being competitive at it, it wasn't hard for me to walk away from it. Mm. I think it's the same thing for me with music. When it stops being, Nashville's a great community. We're all such a good, it's such a cool community compared to like the LA music scene. So I hear, because everyone is supporting each other. These award shows, we're all like, it's like.
Which he's hosted, by the way, which you did great.
Oh, thanks. I got replaced by Reba, which is, that's pretty good. I don't feel too bad about that. It is competitive. I walk on stage, I'm definitely competing with myself in a lot of ways. And when it stops being competitive, I think it's okay. I got, like, there's a lot of things I want to get to and do, and most of them involve just like water and mountains and.
So, are you telling me you really envision a time? I'm surprised by this. You're telling me you could envision a time where this is not what you're doing. Really?
I mean, I hate to put anything out there because I'm a big believer in manifesting stuff. So I hate to put anything into the universe and like it have it come true. But at some point, it's going to end at some point, right? I mean, there are some guys that do it. Mm-hmm. Merle Haggard, he died on the tour bus. You know,
right.
I love that. And those are that's unbelievable. Man, at some point, it's going to, I mean, hopefully you can do it on your own terms where like George Strait's doing it, you know, certain number of shows a year and still has a whole other situation going on. But it's funny. I don't know. It changes so much. I've had guys leave the band because they want to be with their kids. Mm. And then their kids, like a year later, like, Dad, when are you going back out on the road? And they're like,
yeah,
I quit to be here with you. What are you talking about?
Right, right.
You know, my kids now, it changes where I asked Evie, my 10-year-old, I'm like, hey, when do you think I can slow down and retire? What are you thinking? She goes, how about 2088? I'm like, okay, I'll be 104.
That's awesome.
Guys, like, come on now, because they love the road, they love us. So as long as it's fun for everyone, you know, I have such a great band and such a great crew. It's the whole environment out there. Anybody, if you're backstage at my show and anyone walks by, they're going to say hi, they're heads up. Like, it's such a great community.
It really is.
We built that up. I'd hate to ever lose. I'm worried more about losing that.
Yes.
Same about being on stage and having my ego fed by, but I do have so much fun on stage. I don't think anyone has more fun doing what I do nightly. The three shows, being on stage. It's like, I don't want to overextend our time here, but I have some friends that do, I've been in these great, I could probably use one, like a therapist type retreat situation really dial it in and break it down and bash it all out and figure it out. And I would love to do something like that. But if you look at my daily, my everyday, what I do, I mean, Wim Hof, the water guy, and he talks about one of the great reasons about getting an ice bath is because it sucks.
Yes.
And you should do something every day that sucks, right? Yep. Do something that is just not fun.
Yeah.
Like something you have to do. Do I look forward to tonight, like the physical exhaustion of singing three shows and all the meet and greets and all the information I'm taking about somebody's son died in Iraq and this song did that, and it's just there's a lot to go through. It's like facing a mountain. It's like there's a marathon I have to run tonight. I'm not necessarily looking forward to it, to be honest.
I know what you mean.
I could just stay here and be pretty happy the rest of the day.
I think it's one of the most honest things anyone said on my show because I'm the same way. But let me tell you what I watched with you last night, because a lot of people, if they strip their BS away, exactly what you just said is true. Exactly what you just said. And I'm that way too. If I'm being really honest, there's times that I'm flying to go do a speaking, and I'm like, I would rather really be there, right?
but
something happens when I get there.
Yeah, feet touch the ground, and it's like electricity comes through you.
Yes.
And it's like, it's just like running. My wife's a runner. I can't run very well, but she can run a marathon. But I can imagine when I work out, as you know, like the first couple reps, but then the chemical change happens. Like, it probably is biochemistry.
And
all of a sudden you're like, you're home where you're meant to be. And it's like, becomes the greatest, you can't imagine life without it.
Brother, that was the word I was just going to use. It's your home.
Yeah.
It's your calling. And it may not be forever.
Yeah.
But when you get somewhere, you may not always want to get there, but when you get there and that electricity affects you, that dopamine kicks in, that energy surge happens where you're like superhuman almost.
Yeah.
It's a feeling. I don't care if it's a sales call, if it's coming home that you're caring for your children, you're walking out on stage to perform or speak like I do, whatever it is, something happens to you and it's home. It's the home. It's where you're supposed to be in that moment.
Yeah.
You weren't supposed to be on the beach in that moment.
Everyone in my crew, whether Josh Brown who sells t-shirts or everyone does what exactly they love to do. Josh, I've never met someone so excited about selling t-shirts. Mm. And he knows the whole deal, right? Yeah. Like, I used to try to design t-shirts and sell them. Like, they were terrible. Mm. I found Josh. He's like, this guy, this is what he does. And he's really good at it. But for me, like, it's the whole therapy. The whole day is just like, so I get there and I'm, you know, first of all, you usually wake up in a hotel room and you bump into someone doing housekeeping. So right away, you're just like, oh my God, I have so much gratitude that I get to, like, I'm not doing this all day long. You know, so right away, it's like a level of gratitude from being on the road, just the people that are, you're meeting backstage doing security and how hard they work and, you know, the caterers. And then you get to, you know, get to meet all these fans who have been through horrific stuff and they're telling you one of their songs changed their life. Yes. And for me, I found meet and greets, I'm sure the same for you, is like the more open I am, the more easier it is. If 100%. I go in there trying to be like, if I'm all kind of guarded and like just trying to get through it, it's going to be a real pain.
Yes.
You know, my guys have to drag people away. Like, Dirks, it's like, we got to, I'm like, okay, well, I'm sharing the story. So, but you take all that in. And then I get to go on stage. Well, I get to do a bunch of different stage stuff. But the main show, I go out there and yell and scream and pound my chest and lose my mind and lose my voice and literally jumping and pounding on my chest and having. And then I go after that. I go sit with five of the guys of the band who are all married, most have kids, and we talk out, you know, whatever we need to talk out. And then that's just, then I do it all again the next day. So it's like,
it's remarkable.
The indirect effect that the road has, the benefits for me beyond, like, just totally separate from what people see out front. What it does for me as a person and has created the person I am and how it gives me sanity is something people don't see at all. But it's, I think that exists in anything. When you get to do something you really can put your whole heart and soul into, it does kind of self-correct any deficiencies.
If what you're doing every single day never gives you the feeling that you just described, perhaps that's not where you're supposed to be. Perhaps that's not your home. It's not the approach to it. It's when you're in the midst of doing what you do, is there an energy, a peace, a superhuman quality to you, an enjoyment, a bliss, something in your spirit that feels right while you're doing it? That should be the indicator that you're planted in the right place, because I know exactly what you mean, and it's cool that you admit it, because it's not something everybody, I love doing this. It's no, there are days that you don't love it, but when you get there and do it, you feel a certain way. Just curious, a couple more things.
Sure.
What do you think you would have done if you weren't doing this?
God, I mean, that's a great question. I'm so eat up with music when I'd be playing somewhere. I mean,
you would be.
I'd probably be playing Lower Broadway in Nashville, Tennessee, and that's not a bad place to play now. When I was in Nashville back in the day, there was really nothing going on down there. You'd take your friends down to Lower Broadway. Lower Broadway is a stretch of streets from 6th down to the river. It's one street. It's an amazing place now. Back in the day, it was just a bunch of old honky-tonks, and it was cool back then, too, for a totally different reason. But, I mean, you'd have, you know, you're playing for tips, and sometimes I used to play for free drinks.
Wow.
So, but now, you can just make a great living down there, but more importantly, you can have a lot of fun. I mean, there's like the number one bachelorette destination in the country, more so than Vegas per capita. So it's like, if I had got a gig down there now, I'd be like, do I want to go on the road or just like stay here and let everyone just come to me?
Yeah, I understand.
So I think I'd still be playing music in some capacity. I don't know. I really don't know what I would have done. You know, I have some friends just from working the CMA, friends in the TV, National Network, CMT, CMA. I could probably be doing a production job or something. I don't know.
How about business? By the way, I should tell everybody that you and I are business partners in Pig Out Chips.
Yes, we
right?
are.
We should plug that today, at least make sure we've said that. So
I've done some crazy stuff. I like challenges. I don't know why I do them, but I set myself up for stuff just to do stuff. I don't know why. Like, I quit drinking most of last year.
Yeah.
Did three 70-day breaks, which is hard when you're on the road with the Brothers Osborne and Lanco.
I can't even
these guys. I mean, but it was like my wife and I kind of did together, and it was like a really good physical challenge for me. And I've also, I took a year off from eating. Actually, did a year and a half off from eating meat and cheese as a band. Really? We did it as a band together. We watched the documentary, Cowspiracy.
Yeah.
And we were playing a gig up in Syracuse, beautiful venue, but the lake next to it's totally toxic. You can't even like look at it. Your eyes stinging, and we just decided to try something. And man, I'm all down for like just trying stuff. I'm all for experimenting. It was hard. I'm back. I'm not on the train anymore, but I do. What's that?
I saw that.
I eat pretty much anything these days. But I do think I learned so much from that experience. I never really ate salads before that. Now I can see it. Now like you can retrain your taste buds to like literally salivate over like a cucumber, which is like so bizarre to me. I can see that. I can see my mouth. I can right now. Mm. I can like, I never even liked cucumbers before, but I had a year where I was just eating like a lot of a full plant-based diet. It changed my whole Wow. DNA, basically, like of what I have, I see food. So now I'm more likely to eat. You know, we tell our kids this stuff, eat your vegetables. But right. then as adults, we're like, when's that steak coming around? vegetables, oh. But so it definitely helped me kind of just become more conscious of my food stuff. But I'm all for some sort of like, there's a Navy SEAL that wrote a book about limiting yourself. Like, you know, like spend a week sleeping on the floor. Mm-hmm. Then you'll go back to your bed and be like, oh my gosh, I have a bed. Mm. You know, just like just doing
the things. You do those kind of things.
I've never done that. Yeah. But those kind of things though,
you like to challenge yourself out. I guess I'm not surprised to hear it. I'm surprised at the randomness of it though. Like you'll do it with your diet or your drinking.
Or working out. Like yeah. I did a couple months of 5 a.m. workouts, getting up at 4:45. Mm. I always do the cold shower. Yeah. Always cold shower every morning if I take a shower at all. I love the cold, on the road I have the trash can. It's all about getting past the conscious, like retooling your subconscious.
That's exactly right.
With the drinking stuff, you know, we were talking about Sheldon. Drinking is just, you just gotta find ways to monitor that, you know, mm-hmm. especially doing what we do. I have so many friends at the show last night, they're texting me about how hungover they are. I'm like, guys, you gotta learn how to like break down past that subconscious a little bit and know like what you're.
Be aware of it,
yeah.
Self-awareness is a huge thing. It's one of the things I think that's why you have so much humility. That's what I've noticed in you anyways.
Thanks, man.
All right, I got something for you last. By the way, enjoyed this so much.
Me too, thank you so much.
Honestly, like there's a, I've liked you and I've watched how you've treated people. All of our exchanges about your family and your children being the center of your life, I just admire.
Thanks, man.
But what I'm excited about our friendship for is like there's a depth to you that I really, really am so thrilled to see. And explained your success to me.
I've been listening and I'm learning, so thank you.
Well, I'm glad. Anything I can do to help, obviously, man. You know I want to do that.
Amazing podcast.
Thank you. If you had advice to someone, so everyone listen to this, they got a dream of some type, like you did when you were that 19-year-old dude, and they want to make something happen, whether it's a business or a relationship, or they want to get their dream home, or they're an artist.
Yeah.
You know, they want to sing or play professional football or whatever it might be.
See, this is why I listen to you. I don't have the answers to this stuff. I don't know what that advice would be.
I bet you do. I bet something. I'm going to push you on it because you do it. I mean, I think you did it myself if I observe you with crazy work ethic, but I'll let you answer the question.
Well, I do think there's something we talked about earlier about the calling and finding something that really speaks to you. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a lot easier to work hard mm-hmm. and be persistent and have that. If you find something that's like, doesn't matter how off the wall it is, you could be wanting to be a country singer from Phoenix, mm-hmm. Arizona. It doesn't matter. It just, if it's something that really speaks to you, it's going to be a lot easier to like to go after, you know? And you do need to take advice along the way. And it's funny for me, I took this little positive advice the people would give me, I'd kind of stock that and be like, hey, he said, I remember one time I was just like kind of pounding on my dashboard to a song and a bluegrass buddy of mine was like, you have really good timing. Like my playing, my wrist. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, John Golden said I had good timing, all right. Yeah. But then also you gotta be realistic too, if it's not working, then maybe, you know, don't be afraid to
course correct.
Cut bait, yeah.
Yeah, course correct.
Course correct, I love that. But I do think it's going to come, a lot of it, for me, it just comes down to, you know, I played so many gigs that nobody wanted to play, right? I'd go play a crawfish boil. I'd played gigs where literally we like blended into the background. But me and my cousin, Avery on banjo, me and guitar, like just might as well be wallpaper. Nobody even knows we're there, you know, or just any opportunity there was to play, to get out there and do it. I think people talk about songwriting, you know, don't talk about it, actually do it. Write a song a day, you know?
Yeah. Very good.
Get out and play music. If you're doing something, get out there and do it. Don't talk about it, but I don't know. I got some respect. To me, it feels like everything just gets harder and harder as the world continues, man. I feel like it's the mm-hmm. kids out there having to navigate all the social media and you know, and certainly for singing, I think it's just, it's tough. I think it's tougher. I do think it's a lot harder for girls in my business than it is for guys. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of respect for anybody that's out there just trying to make it happen, man. And
so do I. I respect the grind. I respect the effort.
I always call myself a grinder. We were talking about hockey earlier. There's like the slap, the power D. Yeah. You got the finesse guys. I've always just been the guy that goes in the corner and digs the puck out. I mean, that's kind of like what I...
And I think you take for granted that you do that. I'm glad that you commented on it because there's two things I've observed about you, and you've said them both, but I just want to say them back to you. One, I think that people that do things... Everyone I interview... They do so many things very well, they think like isn't that big of a deal. Mm. So all the gigs you did play for nothing or for a free drink or in the background or all those little things, there are millions of guys who also love country music, who also wanted to be you, who passed on that stuff the second time it came around. Like, I already did it. I got nothing out of it. You went and did it again and again and again and again. And there's this thing with persistence, as you've said, that eventually gets rewarded. The best ability is available. Eventually you'll get noticed. Eventually there's a breakthrough. Eventually somebody sees you. And then last night I told Christiana when we left, it was a lesson for me. I learned something watching you last night. I told her, and I know we're in the car driving back. She goes, "You're thinking, you know?" And I thought, I'll tell you, because I really admired what I saw, seriously. Thanks. And your performance was unbelievable, but I watched you backstage. I watched you talk with people. I watched you with me. And I told her, I go, "That was a guy not working." And I said, "Just so you know, not all of that shit's easy for him. Not all that meeting everybody's easy for him. He's found a way that it's like a fuel for him. He's found a way. Just so you all know, he not only performed 3 times last night, but he loves the business so much, he went backstage on the side of the stage and watched the other people perform.
Like, yeah.
You were in bliss last night when you were there. And I told her, I said, I need to be conscious of being grateful for all of these opportunities I have. Because for a man at his level of success to be that grateful and to still work that hard really inspired me. It really did.
I think I'm a student of so many people out there, and I take what I think I can learn from and try to incorporate in my own life. I think I have a natural love of what I do, and I want to share with people. But I remember the first time I took my wife to see Garth Brooks, and he, we went backstage, and he immediately just shushed me. And I think Matt was telling us last night, and he's just one knee talking to my wife the whole time. He's like, "I got to see your nurse." Anyway, so Cassidy, you were a marketing major? I was a marketing major. On one knee talking to her the whole time. He goes out there and plays a 3-hour show. We're leaving. She's walking down the concourse. She's got high heels on, her feet are killing her. And I hear, "Darks, did Cassidy have a good time?" Like, how do you remember her name after like a 3-hour show? It's like little things like that stick with you. Taylor has always been so nice to when we go on the road. She's like, she's just always taking such great care of us. And I say, you draw from the people, and it probably applies to everyone out there listening, no matter what kind of line of work they're in. You just draw, imitate, draw from people that have inspired you. And you get a chance to incorporate that in your own life. Don't have to go reinvent the wheel. Just like look for people that are already kind of doing something you like doing and borrow from them.
Great key. I call it modeling.
Modeling.
That's exactly right.
Why?
Brother, I had no idea we were going to talk about so many relevant things today. I thought we were going to talk about music.
Hey, I did too.
And I'm thrilled that we didn't just talk about music.
It's funny because music's just the front for the whole, for your life. I would say, like, it's all combined. You can't, career, family, all these bits and pieces people try to have. I want to win the whole thing.
You want to win the whole game.
So to me, it's like the career, family, it's one life, right? So how do you get the whole win on the whole deal? And I think this modeling is a big part of it. It's looking around and seeing people that starts with your parents. You might, some people had a harder upbringing than others. My dad was a great model to start from. And I think from there, I've always looked for people that I can model stuff off of and draw from and incorporate in my own life, and hopefully my own success.
I think you're a good model.
Thanks, man.
And I picked up some stuff last night that I'm modeling. So thank you for today. This is one of my, I'll be honest with you, pleasantly so surprised with what we talked about
I'll
today.
Take that, man.
I'm really grateful for it. Thanks, much for being here, brother.
Thank you. We can do it again tonight if you want to come to San Francisco.
I would love that. I might jump on the plane and come watch
on,
you.
Come on, let's go.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Obviously, I want you following Dirks on his social media on Instagram at Dirks Bentley. And I want to remind you on my Instagram, too, every day we run the Max Out 2-Minute Drill. When I make a post every day on Instagram, when I make that post, you got two minutes. Make a comment.
Get that comment in there, folks.
You make that comment. We do a drawing every day. If you make a comment in the first 2 minutes, or if you make a comment on other people's comments, or third, if you just make a comment every day on every post, we pick winners every week on Sundays. We announce them. You get rides on my jet. You get my book. You get coaching calls. You get Max Out gear, all kinds of cool stuff. And I'd love to help you with your life by picking you as one of the winners there. Maybe get a coaching call with me. So make sure you're engaged in my Instagram every day. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Tell people about it. God bless you. Max out your life.
This is the Ed Milet Show.